Hey everyone, I'm excited to bring to you Stefan Karajic.
That's right, my friend.
I got the American way, at least, right?
It's good.
We know each other from LinkedIn. He is a manager of the customer success group of the Connect Enterprise Group, which works with the top 30, the biggest 30 accounts that LinkedIn has across all the different business lines. And you also lead a lot of the mindfulness community stuff on Fridays and a lot of the wellness community here at LinkedIn as well. And you're also the founder of After Ego as well.
That's right, my friend. So happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. I remember listening to Adrian's podcast and I was like, I want him on my podcast. It's such an episode.
We better hide this podcast from him. He's very territorial. I'm joking.
You know, it's fun. So I don't want to take credit for it, but he said that I helped inspired him to actually like double down and actually want to start his own podcast, actually.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think so. I think you played a big part.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember I interviewed him. And he's like, oh, like, let's do this. Like, yeah, like I want to actually like do my own podcast. I was like, yeah, you totally should. Like, that would be amazing. And yeah, he's running with it since then.
Nice. It's we are all in our individual journeys, and it's nice when they crisscross and inspire and provide a little bit of jet fuel for, you know, for other person's journey. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So I know you're a manager, and you know, LinkedIn, for people who are listening, LinkedIn had a layoff. About 960 people were affected by it. So, you know, it's fair to say that morale has been down for some people, and a lot of departments were affected by this. So you know, you, because of who you're being and who you are for LinkedIn and the community, I thought it'd be cool just to have like your perspective and just to have you, you know, because I do think that a lot of people process things differently, and I thought it'd just be timely to have you on the podcast as well.
Sure. I think in times like this, but beyond what just happened, you know, over the last 2 weeks, but in general this year, our mindset, our ability to settle our mind and be present and be able to really be strong with highs and lows is needed more than ever. So happy to talk to you about how mindfulness, how meditation, how any of these techniques can help throughout these times.
Yeah. So, you know, I know like you, it seems like you traveled a lot, like you've been to a lot of different countries. So it's safe to say that you've experienced a lot in the world. I'm curious as to, was there any like one or handful of instances that really has helped you like be really curious about like different techniques and different practices to help you just sort of have more peace of mind?
Sure. Yeah. I think one practice that's probably has been with me throughout my life has been the practice of yoga. I was introduced to yoga when I was roughly 12 or 13 years old by my grandpa. At the time, it was something that it was just fun and interesting for us to learn and share that kind of little bit of physical exercise type of movement-based practice with him. And then it's been with me probably for my whole life. I never really started, or I never practiced the spiritual part of the yogic path. It was predominantly a way for me to stretch, calm my mind down by focusing on my body. But as of last couple of years, I also started getting interested in the spiritual side of the practice. I practiced yoga back home in Serbia. I practiced it while I was in Ireland, but it wasn't until I moved to New York City that I started craving for the more spiritual and maybe more calming aspects of the practice. If you will, my yogic practice before coming to New York, roughly 3 years ago, has predominantly been yang practice, very physical. And it's interesting to look at it in that way. Maybe, you know, prior to coming to New York, I was living in Dublin for a couple of years. And Ireland, depends how you look at it, but it can be a very yin type of environment. You know, lots of rain, life is a lot slower. A big part of the country lives in the countryside. Even, you know, the capital, it has that cozy feeling compared to some of the big cities, especially compared to New York. And I feel like there I was craving more of a yang expression of the practice, practicing Ashtanga yoga, which is this very masculine, in terms of energy, very masculine, very very physical practice. And it wasn't until I moved to the belly of the beast, I'm just joking, I love New York, but it wasn't until I moved here and I started experiencing the hectic lifestyle and high pace of living here that I started craving for more subtle and calmer or yin aspects of the practice. And actually, it's very timely that we speak about this, because 2 weeks ago I've completed additional training in yin yoga. So I took my additional 50-hour certification, focusing more on the yin aspects of the practice from physical, energetic, and mental perspective.
Wow, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's something that I've been interested in a while. I've been exposed to this style of practice before, but I never really delved into all the details. When I look back in some of them, and I don't want to make this our talk just yoga focus, but maybe just a couple of more things that I think might be interesting to you and people listening. You know, today in the West, we have this view of yoga. Some people call it science. Some people call it lifestyle. Some people call it the spiritual path. I think it's all of these things. But our view of yoga is very physical. It's very postural based. A way of, you know, expressing and experiencing movement. In fact, this is actually a new tendency in yoga, right? This is something that has really started to evolve over the last 100 years in the West, over the last 60, 70 years. But if we go back at the beginnings of more postural-based yoga, which was Hatha yoga, and you look at one of those texts that are a staple of this practice, there you will see that the approach to yoga, even in, from a postural perspective, was a balance between yin and yang, more meditative postures that are done on the ground as opposed to the ones that are done standing and balancing, right? And over the last couple of hundred years, we started seeing the shift. As the world became more sedentary, so the yoga became a lot more movement-based. So a little side story there, but I thought it was a huge realization for me when I read this and I realized that this is what was happening. And I thought maybe it would be interesting for you as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because I definitely think, for me at least, my favorite part of yoga is often the more resting, the relaxation part, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think obviously you get a good workout in, but I love, I don't know how many minutes it is, but like the peace that I get at the end, I'm always like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. And the Shavasana or the final relaxation pose is probably the most, you know, the most well-known pose and the one that's mostly yin-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. This is like a totally different question, but I saw on your website
that
you want to do the Vipassana, the 10-day Vipassana.
It was something that's in my plans for 2 years already. I was signed up for a retreat in upstate New York, both this year as well as 2 years ago, I believe. 2 years ago, I think it was roughly maybe a month before the retreat, I actually got injured playing basketball. I tore my right knee ACL, so I had to go for surgery. So I had to cancel that retreat. And this year, a global pandemic happened. And I wasn't able to go there. So I'll probably think twice before I apply next time because, you know, the string of the events are not in my favor. But it's something that I really wanted to do for a while. In the beginning, it was one of those things that I was feeling adventurous to do, but now I feel really a true calling towards either Vipassana retreat in the style of Guenca that's being, organized all across the world, or even, you know, it doesn't have to be particularly a Vipassana style of meditation. Any form of silent retreat, I think I would really, really enjoy. I didn't practice Vipassana for really, you know, in any different form than maybe through meditation apps and just to my own knowledge and interest of the practice. I found it probably the most, it's definitely not an entry point type of practice, especially not in the style of that's being taught where you take a 10-day silent retreat, right? I've heard someone recently describing that as a boot camp meditation. So I don't know. I would love to do it, but it seems like it's just it's not working for me over the last couple of years. Have you done it?
No, I signed up for it. And then what ended up happening was when I was supposed to go, I just got a job offer. It was at a previous company, the one before LinkedIn. So I was like, it was like when it was supposed to be like my first month of work. So I was like, all right, like I wouldn't be able to take off 10 days, like, you know, the first month of work. So I ended up, you know, like canceling it when I got the job offer. But I do want to do it though. Like, so I think it'd be cool to, yeah, would love your account. I mean, when things start to go back to normal, obviously, but I really want to do it. I think I would get a lot out of it. I'm curious, like, what do you think you would get out of doing something like that?
I mean, many things, I think. We are living in the age of the attention deficit, and I think it's one of the most precious commodities these days, attention, awareness, ability to focus. And we're just exposed to all these distractions, the same technology we use for our work and to connect with others, to, you know, prevent serious hardship facing our countries and our companies. The same technology is the greatest source of distraction and the greatest source of waste of time, right? So it's kind of all bundled together. So I feel it would be a nice break from this aspect of living and being. So that's one. Second one, I think it's from a mere perspective that you're not talking for 10 days straight or for however days you commit to go to a silent retreat for. I think that opens up the whole host of new perspectives. I think I've read somewhere that talking takes I don't know, something like 60%, maybe even more, of our brain's processing power. So it's a, you know, it's great for our species. It helped our species evolve, but it's also highly taxing on our system, right? So being able to withdraw from that and just focus on within, I think makes a lot of sense to me. If I can get enlightened, you know, by the way, it would be great.
Have you done like any silent retreat yet, even if it's 1 day or 2 days?
I've done one day silent retreats, yes. I've done different experiments with friends where we would go to nature and you know, have time where we don't speak for a couple of hours and stuff like that. It is amazing. It's so much, talking is such a default behavior. Mm. And even if you notice how hard and uncomfortable it is to be silent with someone, no matter how, you know, close or superficially close you are to someone, being able to be comfortable with the silence, it's a gift these days, right? So yeah, I had little experiments, and I think it's I don't know, you just become so much more observant.
Yeah, it is hard. I did a 1 day silent mm-hmm. retreat once. It was so hard. It was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. It's such a simple concept, but I was struggling, not gonna lie.
Yeah, no, I totally see that. I think part of me is, or actually I think by nature I'm more introverted. So I think, you know, not talking doesn't come that difficult to me. It's almost like, in a way I recharge in that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since I had those experiences, still, one of the best ways for me to start my day is to wake up early, in New York, to wake up early before the city wakes up. You have to wake up really, really early. Which I also used to do. I used to wake up at 4:30, 5 a.m. during one period of time, just to get that, you know, silence in the morning and set my day up. And I still like doing that. Maybe I don't wake up as early these days, but one of the best ways for me to start my day is don't reach for my phone. Maybe start with a little light meditation, a little bit of exercise, and then just start writing down my thoughts in silence.
Hmm.
And even some of the evening routines, you know, it doesn't even have to require a meditation practice, or it doesn't have to require a particular breathwork technique, you know, all these traditions, practices, wisdom traditions are fantastic and they offer a lot of benefit, but sometimes just being in silence for an hour of your day, even if it's in the evening, it's so helpful. Clears out the noise and you start noticing what's really happening below the surface level.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. And it's funny too, because we work at LinkedIn, right? And I think LinkedIn can be, I mean, I think everything in moderation, right? I think if you're on LinkedIn like obsessively, like I think that could be bad as well, right? So sometimes I'm like, man, like, am I on LinkedIn too much?
Yeah. I mean, sure. Yeah, you can, I think you can. We have this unique ability as human species to abuse a lot of things, right? And technology is no exception. I recently saw, as I was scrolling through the news feed on my browser, I saw like a notification on LinkedIn. It was actually in the middle of the news feed saying, you're up to date.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I saw that. That's new. Yeah,
which I really liked. I thought that was really, it's really thoughtful. It's like almost giving you a nudge saying, You don't need to scroll anymore. You saw everything you needed to, you needed to see. You can move on. And it's so thoughtful. You don't see this this approach that often these days.
Yeah, it's almost counterintuitive for companies, right? Because I think obviously the more time you spend on like a Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, I'm sure the more money the app makes, right? Just because that's just how advertising works. So yeah, I saw that and I was like, whoa. And I do notice myself like seeing that a lot. And I'm like, okay, so it has helped me actually turn off because I'm like, oh, nothing new. And I turn off, but who knows how many times prior to that being a feature, I would read it and I would still go to, you know.
You know, it's hard to set boundaries. Sometimes I feel like many different techniques have worked well for me in the past. But every once in a while, you know, I need to revisit some of the classics, like your Pomodoro technique of, you know, setting that little timer of 25 minutes and 5 minute break. Even if you are, you know, a lot of us are using LinkedIn to help some of the world's largest companies, right? So we need to effectively use the platform in order to, you know, help some of our largest clients. And, you know, I've sometimes I catch myself applying the Pomodoro technique. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's very simple. I think you are. And a lot of people are. It's such a great time management technique. I apply it in this way, create a little bit of boundaries, you know. One of my yoga teachers used to really like using props, like a yoga strap or blocks during the practice. And he used to say to us, you know, these props are not there to make your practice easier, but they're giving you boundaries, you know? So, you know, not to push beyond your limit, not to go over the edge, you know? So in similar way, I think we need to have mental, technological, many boundaries.
I like that. Yeah, I haven't thought of it that way. I'm curious. So it sounds like you've had a lot of teachers in your life. Like, what's something that you've learned from the latest yoga certification you received? Like, what's?
Yes. I had so many realizations, my friend. Like, my mind has been blown so many times. I had to pick my brains, the pieces of my brain, many times. So I think one of the biggest things I learned was functional approach to yoga, which is something I maybe intuitively felt before, but then I never thought about it in this way. And that's, again, more from a physical aspect of the practice, but also from energetical and mental. So a great emphasis 2 weeks ago was placed on how different we all are, which is something, again, we intuitively know, but we went into details talking about how even anatomically and from the way that our bones are shaped, the way that our joints are limited in range of motion because of our, you know, of how our bones are shaped. My practice is going to be only my practice, and it's going to be completely different from yours. And my job, under quotation marks, as a teacher, is to guide you through figuring out what works for you. You know, instead of telling you to maybe orient yourself a certain way or give you all these elaborate alignment cues, you know, my job turns more into what are you feeling? This is the target area of the pose. Are you know, do you feel the effects there? If something's stopping you, what's stopping you, right? Is it more of physical aspects? Is it, if it's physical, is it tension or is it compression? You know, it's like giving this practice, this teacher's training gave me this vocabulary to be able to apply it and guide my students in helping them figure out what's going on and how can they make the practice their own without having to follow a certain dogma or even, you know, alignment cues that simply don't work. So that was a huge realization. And, you know, I spent 2 weeks practicing asking myself these questions, and I figured out some of the common poses I was doing, like a downward dog pose, you know, that I was doing it in a way that just didn't feel right for me. And I was kind of trying to convince myself that this is the right way to do it. This is the textbook approach to it. And, but just, you know, slightly modifying how my feet are turned inward, as opposed to being completely parallel, it has opened up the pose so much for me, you know. So simple things like that. I don't know. I never thought about it in this way.
And it sounds like it ties into like being a good manager too, right? Because each one of your reps probably have such a different specialty, or, you know, a different way of being.
Yeah, I think it's a real good approach to anything, right? Being completely aware of the uniqueness, and in case when you're leading a team, unique talents of the people on your team. So yeah, I think it translates to many areas.
I'm curious, like being a manager, I'm sure you learn a lot too, right? Like, what are some of the lessons that you've learned, like, about yourself? And just, because I do think a lot of people like think they want to be a manager, but maybe, you know, we don't really know what it's actually like to be one.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And it's not an easy question to answer, because it felt like this year, everything I thought I knew, or everything I thought I learned before, has changed so radically. But I don't have, so if I had to pick one thing to talk about a little bit more details, is I had this posted here on my computer. And actually, I need to put up a new one, which had the word solutioning crossed out. And this really came as through one of the conversations I had with my manager. And, you know, she's been a great coach to me during my first year as a manager. And we talked a lot about this individual contributor mindset that gets you really far, which is really centered on solutioning. You know, figuring out the problem, setting up the problem, and then moving quickly towards execution and solution, right? This is a type of mindset that's highly rewarded when you're working with clients. I don't think it's as useful when you are working in a leadership capacity, or when you're helping to lead and manage a team. Right? You want to inspire, you want to develop your team, and not necessarily solution on their behalf. So having to pull back, take a more of a passive role, and help coach and guide the team towards the best solution is probably, well, I'm sure something I'll be perfect, you know, I'll be working on and trying to perfect over the next many years to come. Because it is it's a tough skill to master. But that's probably one of the things, even though I heard people say to me, that, you know, once you move into once you're past the individual contributor mindset, that this is something you should really leave your solutioning aside, but it's very, very hard to actually put in practice.
I mean, yeah. And then I guess, like, what are your thoughts on like delegation, right? So you're not like taking on.
Yeah. And I think it's a sister branch to the one that I just, you know, talked about. Obviously, you know, if you have a team of that can range from 4 or 5 direct reports all the way to 10, 12, 15, right? It's hard to do everything. I would say it's impossible to do all the things you want to do on your own, right? And again, yeah, that's the type of mentality and mindset that gets you far in your career, you know, taking on more responsibility and really increasing your capacity. But then once you step into a leadership role, you need to figure out what are the unique talents of different members of your team. What do they enjoy? What are their career aspirations? And according to that, what are their, you know, preferable working energies? And based on that, create projects to move as a solid unit to move forward, so that everyone will take on those little projects and assignments in a way, you know, that they feel inspired and that they feel it's going to move them towards where they want to be in their career. So it's kind of intersection of a couple of those things, being really mindful of talents, being really mindful of people's careers and aspirations, and then looking at the goal you need to accomplish. So it's a huge part of a manager's role.
And how does one know when he or she is ready to be a manager?
It's a good question. So I don't know. In my case, I can share my experience. So, you know, I had leadership experience very early on in my career when I was more in NGO, non-government organization space, nonprofit space. The very start of my career, where I led a nonprofit organization of 150 volunteers. And then during my corporate career and corporate life, I have always been in individual contributor roles. And as of last couple of years, I started again being drawn to sharing my experience in more of a leadership capacity. And then, my formal education is engineering. So the way I approach ideas that I have is through little tests, you know. So one of the first tests when I had this idea was, okay, does LinkedIn provide any programs for potential future leaders? And, you know, so I applied for one of those programs internally, got accepted and got to see what's it like to be a leader at LinkedIn. The program is called Emerge In. From that point on, I had the privilege and honor to be a team lead on one of the teams in CEG, where, you know, I got to experience firsthand. And then, you know, so it was like series of little experiments that I was trying to see, am I ready for this? Is this something that I'd be really passionate about? So yeah, that was my road. I think there's many ways to test it without necessarily having to even have these formal programs, right? So if you naturally see yourself raising hand in your team to you know, help solve either a business challenge or improve the way the team works in any shape or form, you know, without having to be such a formal process, it's I think those are some of the signs.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like when you were leading 150 volunteers, like you saw like glimpses of like, oh, okay, like I think I'd be a good manager because, you know, I was able to like inspire, motivate, and add value to all these volunteers and help out all these people.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was the inception of it. But it's totally different to do it in a corporate sector, and especially different to do it, I guess, in a tech company, right? There's on one side, you know, you're leading a team of super highly talented people, you know, and I think the way I see my job is set the stage and conditions right so that they can succeed and for us to achieve what's expected of us and move out of the way. Mm. Right. So which is, it's not an easy task, I think, at start, but some of the people I admire the most and some of my role models and some of the leaders I admire, they are very, very good in this.
I mean, we have so many great leaders at LinkedIn. Like, who are some leaders who stand out to you who, you know, you would say like you've learned a lot, like even maybe modeled after some of their ways of being or just some of their philosophies?
Yeah, I think I've been lucky enough to have had really exceptional managers from my time in Europe. My managers from back then, her name is Katrina Hanna. She is now a director of customer success in Singapore for Salesforce owned company. She's been highly influential and someone I always admired to, frankly, all the managers, including my current manager. I think we have such a wealth of talent with all different, from all different walks of life and different qualities. You know, I really admired my first manager's consultative approach. My second manager, the lady under the name Wendy Kosmak, who got me to move to New York, and when I joined CEG team, I really admire her capacity to be the professional roadblock remover for her team. Do exactly what I mentioned just a while ago, set her team up for success. To my current manager, who has a wealth of knowledge in consultative space, right? And it's really an excellent systems thinker, someone who's able to solve very complex problems and projects and has these amazing frameworks. And I'm learning so much from her as well, you know? So it's been a series of events and I think one led to another, but I've been really lucky with all of my managers here at LinkedIn. And I think we have a pretty impressive executive team as well. Try to learn from them every time. I used to see them on stage. Now every time we see them in a virtual meeting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing. I'm curious. Like, so you're really passionate about like a lot of things, and I'm curious about like your vision for After Ego. Like, where do you see this going? You know, this is like a relatively newer venture of yours, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it's something that's been in the back of my mind for a long time. It's probably one of the dreams I have in my life is to create a holistic well-being center, which will, you know, encourage people to explore either paths like yoga, meditation, different creative, you know, teach them different creative skills. So it's in line with my dream, right? It's something that I had in the back of my mind for a long time. It really stemmed from yoga, but it started branching out into things like breath work, into things like sleep science, nutritional science, and so on. It is a passion project of mine. I don't necessarily know how it will look like in the next couple of years. It's the way it looks like right now is I'm mostly teaching virtual yoga and meditation classes online. I do work with a couple of private clients as well, where we either focus on health habits or again, yoga and meditation. The whole approach behind After Ego is East meets the West, scientific curiosity meets the ancient wisdom traditions of the East, So I, you know, that's why, that's probably the only way I know how to make sense of these traditions, which I have huge respect for, but I also want to see them kind of marry with Western way of analyzing and maybe science-based approach. So it's probably the next couple of years are going to be iteration of what I'm doing right now, right? So trying to incorporate more and more of these modalities into my teaching, helping as many people be on the road of physical, mental, energetical, spiritual transformation. And then hopefully one, you know, one day in the future, I'll be able to have a residency, either in the form of a yoga studio or maybe a little retreat center. And who knows, maybe we'll do our silent retreat center in a place like that together one day.
Yeah, it's interesting. Have you ever been to the Assemblage?
What is this? It's very, sounds very familiar.
It's like a, I guess it's like a co-working space, like specifically for like people in the wellness community.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen like Instagram ads of this place or something.
They would. It's interesting. Yeah, you go there and like there's like sage burning in the background, and there's like every type of coach, every type of meditation, like every type of programming, like possible. I mean, because of COVID right now, obviously it's probably, you know, the space probably isn't doing so well. But I just remember they just have like the most fascinating people come speak there. Like, you know, there'll be like Marianne Williamson, or there'll be like, you know, like just like really interesting people. But I feel like you would definitely vibe with the people there. Like everyone just has all these cool things and you know, a lot of interesting, like there's a lot of discussions on like really interesting topics.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of this other place in New York City called the Alchemist Kitchen.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of a similar thing, just maybe a little bit more holistic nutrition focused, not so much as a co-working space, but they also give lectures, and you can actually, I think even they have a little cafe where you can come and work. But I'm checking out the pictures here from the place you mentioned. It looks so cool.
Yeah, they serve Ayurvedic food. Mm, so nice. You know, all the catering is that, and they have elixirs. So all the elixirs like have, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'm sure everything is back to normal, we should definitely go there and check it out sometime. They have some cool stuff there.
Sure, this looks fantastic.
Well, yeah, I mean, this has been a pretty interesting conversation. I know we talked about like so many different things, but you know, I really like appreciate you and thanks for, you know, it's people like you that make LinkedIn such a fascinating place to work for, where, you know, you like people who have a lot of different interests, who is passionate about solving business problems, but it also is passionate about wellness and nutrition and, you know, breath work. Like, I just think LinkedIn is really cool because there's so many interesting people that just add so much to the culture and the environment here. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me, and likewise, my friend. Thank you for being such a staple of our organization, our culture, and especially of our mindfulness group. You know, you're one of the OGs from the inception of our New York mindfulness group. So I appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and yeah, I'll probably see you on Friday, right? Most likely.
Right. That's right, my friend.
Okay, take care.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.